Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. No doubt starts now. This is the broadcast for December the 11th of the year of our Lord, 2023. This is hour one of two in the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country, to do so on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers. That is the supreme law of the land, the blueprint for liberty, the Constitution for the United States of America. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. Wow, there's so much to talk about, so little time. Shall we get it done? All right, let's do it. Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I am Sam Bushman, and I had a delightful, absolutely wonderful weekend, and I hope you did as well. As you know, our goal is always to restore the Republic and the traditions of our founding fathers. It is December the 11th, and we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth, unless, of course, it's the Jesus Revolution. You know, we talked about conservative members of the, quote, House Republican Conference. They really want to put together an extension of this NDAA, Section 702. It's a disaster. They call it FISA, which is the Section 702 of the NDAA. The whole thing is absolutely disaster. It's unconstitutional. It allows government litter to spy on everybody around the world, including we the people, the American citizen. George Bush lied about it, got caught lying, and instead of tossing him in jail like he belonged, Congress literally, by, in my opinion, criminal activity, pretend legislation is the way the Declaration of Independence put it. They literally codified his actions as if they were legal, appropriate, and right, even though he lied and even though it was absolutely illegal, unconstitutional, and against the law. In fact, it was so bad, Matt Gaetz, congressman of Florida, said you couldn't even waterboard me into authorizing Section 702. Well, forget about just the section. They got to gut the whole criminal activity. Now, we blame the president for it all the time, but we shouldn't. We should blame Congress and we the people, because Congress and the FISA court, they say, have attempted to rein in this power over and over. No. They're the ones that created the power. Courts don't rein in power unless they're honest courts. Then they don't rein in or grant power. They simply interpret what was intended. And if the interpretation is wrong, then it's back to the congressional drawing board to repair, to fix the oversight, the mistake, the whatever. The courts are not the make the law, reduce the law, change the law, manipulate the law. The courts are like, hey, here's what you have set it to be. And if it's wrong, you need to go fix it. If it's right, fine, let it stand. But we're playing all the wrong rules when it comes to the checks and balances. And I hold we the people and Congress responsible. The president's out of control, no doubt about it. But, folks, this is just something to behold. I'll tell you that. Dr. Scott Bradley, of course, with me, freedomsrisingsun.com. Hope you had a delightful weekend, number one. And number two, I don't think I've understated the problem with FISA, the NDAA, the criminal activity of Congress, the president, of all these authorized actions, where George Bush literally lied, and instead of going to prison and being impeached over it, he literally got promoted and endorsed. Dr. Bradley, am I crazy?
Well, I don't think so. I think there's a lot of people that are conflating a lot of interactions with a lot of these things that are so, I mean, there's multiple things involved. You know, back in the early 60s, we got the first roll around of the NDAA. I think it was its intent was to do what the Constitution largely says to do. It's become a big roll it all into one bundle kind of problem. And then we've got the 1978 FISA court that was created, which created an unconstitutional court right from the get-go, from the roots of it up, is bad. Judge Roberts is the one that appoints the judges into the FISA court. It's a secret court that hears
it's really a star chamber, an unconstitutional star chamber,
and it hears ex parte. Nobody gets to defend themselves in it. They are a rubber stamp, like one guy said, and I wish I could remember who it was. He said it's a kangaroo court with a rubber stamp. So that court comes along. They add the 702 in there back in the Bush era, and the 702 basically allows warrants to be issued against Americans.
George should have been impeached and gone to prison over that. You know that?
Well, all the way along the line, there's been all sorts of falsehoods, and this stuff, the Patriot Act's involved in it. But the problem is, not the only problem, but it is one of the problems, is that what they do on this 702 stuff is it basically allows the court to, well, the FBI, they did like Carter Page, we used last week as an example, how they lied to get warrants. Nobody ever goes to jail for that. I mean, there hasn't been an FBI, you know, take them to the chopping block kind of thing with this thing. So there's a lot of things that are kind of woven together. And the only reason I kind of make a nuanced statement, and it's still not nearly as detailed as it should be, but is that many people that if you just say, oh, the FISA court, people say, well, yeah, but the 702 is not the FISA court, or the NDA is not the FISA court, or the vice versa, or anything that. There are multiple pieces in play.
It's all woven together, but the fact is it's all unconstitutional. It's all criminal.
Absolutely. And what's happening is that it's kind of like what happened. This is, you know, I always go back into a historical perspective, but they sometimes make examples that should be understood. But, you know, the idea of habeas corpus was written into the Constitution. It's in Article 1, Section 9. It's a legislative power. It is not an executive power. Well, in 1863, Lincoln, he suspended habeas corpus. And Taney in the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. That's a legislative power. So what did the legislature do? They delegated unconstitutionally, because you cannot re-delegate a power that's assigned to you constitutionally, because the consent of the governed happened when they...
Yeah, and the simple example is you said, I'm going out of town, Sam. Can you watch my house? I've got renters in it. You're the steward. Keep an eye on the house while the renters are there. Make sure the upkeep and make sure they make the payments and put the money in my account, and I'll pay you handsomely when I return. When you return, I sold the house and took all the money and said, well, you said I was in charge. Wait, what? That's not at all what was agreed to. And that's really akin to what they've done and what's being done.
Absolutely. The Congress in 1863 unconstitutionally delegated to the president the authority to suspend habeas corpus. Well, all of that stuff is a disaster. But what happened in 1871 is President Grant, I mean, here we're talking, Lincoln's dead, Johnson's been in and out, and Grant's in now. Well, Grant comes in, and he's the guy that suspends habeas corpus. The executive has claimed that since. So what happens is when we get a little bit off track and along these lines, well, some of them are big off tracks, the whole FISA court.
Well, they start out usually little off tracks, and then over time they become big off tracks. It's like a compass. You know, you start out, and you're slightly pointing the wrong way. It doesn't seem like very much at first.
Well, it extrapolates out, some distance out, a long ways off. And so that's kind of what's been happening, and we continue to extrapolate out farther and farther. Now, the people that are really, really, really in favor of this 702 thing are saying, oh, my goodness, we're all going to die. We've said that last Friday. If we don't do this, we won't be able to have ears to the ground about all of the bad guys and what they're doing out there. They miss everything anyway. Who knew, for example, Hamas was doing what it was going to do November.
Oh, they totally knew. The thing is, I do believe they have the ears with or without 702, with or without the FISA court, with or without these criminal NDAA plans. They can have their ears to the ground and know what's going on internationally, no problem, regardless of all that. With very simple apparatuses under the direction of Congress, it's very easy to do. But they lie and they deceive and they back into the way to steal the people's sovereignty, spy on the people, and until the American people wake up, it's got to stop. Matt Gaetz and a few others are the only ones speaking out against 702. That's only a tiny section. I get it. It's a critical section. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting it's okay. We need to be absolutely 1,000% against it. But it's only a tiny sliver of that pie anyway. Folks,
it gives,
look, we're debating a tiny sliver of that massive surveillance that we've allowed the government to create, not only in the United States, but now around the world, tying into the World Economic Forum.
What this stuff does, it gives cover of law to the all these behaviors. Patriot Act's in the middle of that, too. The NSA, this group of people at the south end of the Salt Lake Valley that listens to every single text message, voicemail, email, telephone conversation, probably radio stuff too, right,
Sam? Yeah, you guys don't need to listen to that in spy mode. You can download at libertyroundtable.com or just about any other distribution point on podcasts on the planet, okay?
But that's the problem. It gives cover of law to this stuff, and they say, oh, we're not violating the law. Oh, sometimes people make mistakes, and, oh, here's how we fix it. We do better training. Okay, so
once
FBI
in a while,
agents,
somebody missteps, you know, the little guy should be let go because he made a misstep. But don't worry, it's back on track, and we put some things in place. Then it happens again, and then they say the same thing, and Americans have short memory, and nothing happens. The bottom line is this criminal activity must stop, or eventually it will destroy the country. America will not be destroyed from our enemies from without. It will be destroyed from within. And this is one of the key, in my opinion, inroads to destruction for America. Because once you let this fall or continue or whatever you want to say, all bets are off. All right, listen. I'm going to skip the break because I don't like breaks anymore. I'm sick of them. I don't like it. You know what? You could say, well, wait a minute, Sam, don't you got advertisers? I have advertisers, but the ones that put in real money aren't the ones that want to be promoted and want advertisements anyway. There's a few of them that do, that are great, that I advertise live. Live reads, RussQuinnAndGift.com. They do a wonderful job. If you want a friend in the honest money business that'll deliver you real metal and put real money in your hand, RussQuinnAndGift.com is your guy. There's several others that I'll mention along the way, but look, running these breaks are starting to become a clown show because here's the problem. Then they want to do is all my enemies, the Rolling Stone magazine, Southern Poverty Law Center, IREHR, Anti-Defamation League, all they want to do is spend their time to hunt down my advertisers so they can drag them through the mud and either have them quit or ruin their lives or their businesses, you see. That's what's happening now. Anyway, I digress. Dr. Scott Bradley's with me. Doctor?
You know, you're not digressing. I mean, this thing is epidemic or pandemic or whatever the heck they want to call it. I mean, you look at somebody that's a bazillionaire, which is about the exact opposite of you, Elon Musk. I mean, they're doing the same thing to his advertisers. They did it to, what's his
Mike
name?
Mike Lindell.
InfoWars. Yeah, Mike Lindell.
They did it to Alex Jones. By the way, we'll bring up Alex Jones and Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk coming up here in the next little bit in the broadcast, too.
Oh, okay. I'll have to hang on and fasten my seatbelt because there's probably a lot to be said, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff to be said about that. But listen to me. Venice is sinking. You know that, right?
Who? Oh, yeah, I've heard that a long time.
All right, Venice is sinking.
Well, what are you doing?
So are Rotterdam, Bangkok, and New York. They're all sinking, right? But no place compares to Jakarta, India. It's the fastest sinking nemesis on the planet, they say. And they say this, over the past 25 years, for example, listen, they say it's the hardest hit city in the world and the hardest hit areas of Indonesia's capital have subsided or sunk more than, 16 feet. And they say, you know what, the city has until 2030 to get this figured out. They got to have a solution, or experts say, you know what? It will be too late. Over. It will not be able to hold back the, quote, Java Sea. The wall won't last. So the headline says, could Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, disappear by 2030? This reminds me of biblical discussions, Dr. Bradley.
Well, you know, historically, there's been all sorts of disasters, and of course, nobody nowadays ever attributes this to some kind of godly.
Yeah, but buddy, you're listening to Liberty Roundtable Live. It is God, family, and country, sir.
Well, that's the thing, is that we have plenty of examples where societies have risen and fallen. We've had, people look at America and they say, these United States, you know, there's no way we're not going to have any difficulties, challenges. We're too good. We're too. I believed that when I was 6 years old. I really did. I really thought, as I looked at the biblical predictions of the conflagrations of the Middle East and the end times and all that kind of stuff, I thought, no, the United States is too good. They'll never be entwangled in that kind of stuff. Well, you know what? We are the principal instigators in many instances to what's going on there. And so,
sad but true. Hostile principal instigators. In other words, we're not even on the right side of the discussion, much less being in the middle of it. We're instigating the problems that we face nine times out of ten.
Yeah, we're arming everybody. I mean, it's a bazillion-dollar business with the military-industrial complex. And, I mean, you know, Biden, by the way, just authorized the sale of some, you know, critically important to Israel anyway, high-tech weapons. And they're going to buy it. I don't remember the number. It's something over $100 million. But whose bank account does that go into? It goes into the military-industrial complex that Biden is facilitating. And so all of these kinds of things, we are the most warlike people on earth. Okay, so coming around again, the Prince of Peace, we commemorate his birthday coming up. It wasn't really his birthday on 25th of December, but let's not get in that discussion right now. But the point of the matter is, we commemorate it. And, you know, what did Isaiah say? Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. What did the angelic host say as they enunciated, you know, they announced his birth to the shepherds? You know, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Everything we're doing mocks this Prince of Peace. I mean, and then we get into the stuff about the perverse sexual focus that's going on all over, you know, the United States seems to be immersed in it. It's just amazing to me. And you think, well, wait, big societies, big powerful nations and these completely you couldn't conquer them if you tried. And they do get conquered because they debauch their society to the point. In fact, Montesquieu said that when you have a great general movement in society for women to become immoral. And now that's not to say men should be. I mean, I'm not in any way condoning that. But if you're raising the children...
Here's the truth. They would criticize us for talking about the women being immoral as if it's the women, not the men, and men are okay. Neither are okay according to God or to us. The reason that we highlight the women like we do is because God teaches that really women are the safeguards of morality in America, because they're the ones that rock the cradle. And the one that rocks the cradle literally rules the nation because of what they teach or don't teach their children. And so we're not picking on women. We're highlighting their role in a very sacred way by highlighting this principle. And then all they'll do is turn it around, manipulate, and mock us for it. But the truth is, hey, women have tremendous responsibility not to be underestimated, not to be mocked, not to be ridiculed by those who are enemies of God whatsoever. And so let's be clear. We're not getting men off the hook. Men should be as moral as women and have every obligation to do so. What we're talking about is the incredible pivotal role women play in God's plan. Doctor, have I stated it right?
Well, you have. It's a divine role, indeed. And men have a divine role also. The point of the matter being, from what Montesquieu said, we will lose our constitution if the women of the nation become immoral. We're really moving towards that much faster. I mean, all of the icons of, you know, the heroes, whatever you want to call them, the celebrities, these ones that are put up in media and held up, and the ones that are in office. I mean, you look at, for example, Bill Clinton and his dalliances with an intern, and you say, holy cow. I mean, here we have people. George Washington spoke eloquently and powerfully about the importance of private morality, private virtue, and what it did to a nation if the leaders varied from that. Jefferson spoke about this. We could speak a long time about
it. Yeah, almost really all the founders have made statements about it in one way or another. But listen, I know you mentioned that Joe Biden gave a bunch of money to Israel or whatever and gave a bunch of money to Hamas. And he's been begging for money. But look, I blame Congress. Headline says this. House approves $14.5 billion in military aid for Israel, according to the AP. This just happened last Thursday. So it's, you know, it's Congress, it's the House, it's the purse string pullers. I know the president's at fault to some degree for spending the money and for asking for it and all that. But why do we look at the president for this? We unconstitutionally don't even understand who controls the money. I blame Congress. I blame the House. If they said no, it would be DOA, doctor.
You're absolutely correct. Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution tells us how a law gets passed. If it has to do with spending money, it starts in the House. The Senate can amend it. It goes back to the House. If they do, they have to agree on the exact bill that it gets to send to the president. So there's always this process. Go read Article 1, Section 7. But Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7, says that no money can be spent unless it is legally goes through that legal process. So yeah, absolutely. The Congress does have the responsibility, and the president shouldn't have big slush funds, or whatever they're calling them nowadays, where they say, oh, we got these discretionary funds, we're going to legislate to you, you can do whatever you darn well please with them. That isn't how the business goes. We have become kind of a...
And for Congress to give blanket money to the president to spend in whatever slush fund he wants is criminal.
It is. They're violating their oath of office. I mean, and the fact of the matter is that we, the people, need to remove them from office. The fact of the matter is also that the 17th Amendment really violated one of the checks and balances. It used to be that the people put the House into office, the states put the Senate into office. Now the states are not even involved in the process. The people put both the House and the Senate in. And we all know that people are greedy and they can be, mob can be swayed by eloquent silver-tongued devils. And that's basically what we've done. We've put the senators as glorified House of Representative members for 6 years instead of 2 years. The reason the House had two-year terms was so that they could be brought up before the people every 2 years and judged by the people as to whether or not they were obeying their job description, if you will.
And the other reason the House had so many representatives was so that they could be accountable to the people, to where you could actually talk to your member of Congress and explain to him, like the farmer explained to Davy Crockett, it isn't your money to spend, buddy. This has got to stop. They had this conversation over a fence, if you read the story, right out of the farm. Okay, this is the kind of stuff. Now you can't contact your House representative if you try to. You're lucky to get an assistant.
Well, that's, there's an amendment that's still out there. It was passed in September 25th, 1789. That was, well, by two-thirds margin from the House and the Senate, it was sent out. There were 12 amendments sent out September 25th, 1789, for the states to ratify. And what they, 10 of them were ratified and put into effect the 15th of December, 1791. One of them, 200 years later, got ratified, and that had to do with how the House could take a raise, and we could talk of these at length if you wanted to. But it took 200 years to get that one ratified. The other one that's still out there has to do with the level of representation of the people and the ratio between their House of Representatives members and the number of people that they're representing. So the constituency would be a much lower number under this pending, and it's still pending. There was no expiration date on it. This pending amendment that could pass, and we would have a huge House of Representatives if it passed. But it would put them closer to the people, potentially. It really, truly would. So, and there's some issues on both sides of the size of it. The 435 members of the House is a legislatively created number. And it's probably close to 700,000 constituents for each member of the House, roughly. So that's about where it is now. That's why you're just a number, Sam. Nobody cares about you that's out there in office.
Sad but true. Heartbreak. Reality check. Liberty Roundtable Live. Dr. Scott Bradley, Freedom's Rising Sun, and yours truly continue in seconds on your radio.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Lance Pry. At least a half dozen people have been confirmed dead after tornadoes touched down in Middle Tennessee over the weekend. Dave Collins has more.
Three of the victims were confirmed dead in the Nashville suburb of Madison. Nashville officials say they have teams assessing the damage and looking for victims after Saturday's tornadoes. Three fatalities were also reported near Clarksville, where nearly two dozen people have been reportedly injured.
President Zelensky of Ukraine will be visiting the White House tomorrow to speak with President Biden. Talks while he's in town include the Speaker of the House, Republican Mike Johnson. GOP Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio praised Ukrainians for fighting bravely, but quickly added that only negotiations would end the war. Vance included that Ukraine will need to give up some land to Russia in order to end that war. Senator Vance added that the notion of Russian President Vladimir Putin invading NATO alliance countries, he called it a scare tactic to justify sending more money to Ukraine. An African-American woman is alleged to have poured gasoline all over the front porch of the house where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was born in Atlanta, Georgia. The event happened last Thursday afternoon, but Utah visitors quickly saved it, standing in her way when she tried to bring a lighter onto the porch. When the woman tried to leave the scene, two visiting New York Police Department officers apprehended her until Atlanta police arrived. The suspect is 26-year-old Lanisha Henderson, a decorated veteran and surface warfare specialist in the U.S. Navy. Bronny James is back playing basketball yesterday. The University of Southern California freshman is the son of basketball player LeBron James. A little over 4 months ago, the younger James suffered a heart attack. 19-year-old James came off the bench and scored 4 points, three rebounds in an overtime loss to Long Beach State. USA News.
Hey, here's a question. After you wear your clothes, you toss them in the washing machine, right? Nobody wants to wear dirty clothes. So how do we not throw your shoes in the washing machine when they get dirty? I mean, come on. Your shoes are touching the filthy ground all day long. Gross. But with Skechers, you can. Because most Skechers are machine washable. That's right. Skechers are specially made so you can toss them right in the washing machine and keep them clean and looking new. And when they look new, you can confidently wear them longer. That's less shoes you're going to want to throw away, which means less waste. And it'll save you tons of dough. I love that. Plus, machine washable Skechers are for the whole family, men, women, and kids. So when your kids get their shoes dirty, oh, and we know they will, just wash them. Brilliant. And even our latest technology, new hands-free Skechers slip-ins are washable. You just step right in and go without bending down or even touching your shoes. So give your Skechers the same treatment you give your clothes. Just toss them in the washing machine and keep them looking brand spanking new. Buy machine washable Skechers at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear happens to be sold.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, live on your radio. We talked about, cities sinking. It's biblical. We talked about House approves 14.5 billion in military aid to Israel. Joe sent money to Hamas, too. We're literally funding, promoting, training, arming, war everywhere. It's criminal activity. Now Vivek Ramaswamy's in the news. This is a very interesting, long kind of a story here. There's a soundbite. Get ready for it, Lizzie. It's in the folder. Vivek Ramaswamy is polling at 5%. That's support nationally, they say. Behind former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, she's at 12.4%. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Ron is at 12.7%, so they're basically neck and neck. They say former President Donald Trump at 60.3%. That's according to Real Clear Politics average numbers. Just be ready for it. It says Ramaswamy in it. It's the only one that says that. And so Look, 5% versus the president of the United States, former Donald Trump, 60%. Everybody else in the middle at 12%. I mean, even if you put them all together, they don't even come close. I like Vivek because I think he says the right things. I'm concerned about his ties a little bit to his parents and his native country. And we've talked about with Dr. Bradley about how that's a problem. But UN Ambassador Nikki Haley is only at 12%. So is Ron DeSantis. These are the top four people. Nobody else even has a prayer. Okay? You've literally got Chris Christie, this guy that's the governor. He's been in politics forever, and he's literally a governor. He's pulling at like 1% to 2%. Dr. Bradley, if I got in the race and they gave me any time on the debate stage, any time anywhere publicly, I'd be polling that well. So I don't know what's going on here, but this is insane that these people are even spending millions, literally billions of dollars on their races.
You know, when last Friday, I think it was, I says it's the race to the bottom or the race for second place. I can't decide for sure which it is, but I think that there's it really is kind of a travesty what's going on. You talk about Christie. I personally believe that he's going to pull the plug, throw his support behind Nikki Haley. You know, the last debate, quote unquote, it wasn't a debate. It was a free-for-all tussle with a lot of innuendo. There's so little really valuable stuff that comes out of that. It's kind of, I mean, a yawner every time. But at any rate, I kind of suspect he might become what he would work as a kind of a spoiler in the race. He was kind of building Nikki up a little bit during the debate. He certainly didn't oppose her really. And I kind of suspect that at some strategic point, according to his own calculations, I think he'll probably pull the plug and throw his considerable weight behind Nikki.
You're right.
Those ad hominem kind of things. At any rate, and Nikki Haley, I mean, here she is, former United Nations ambassador. She's a young world leader, according to Klaus Schwab. She had a kind of a mess of a governorship. She's a globalist in so many ways. I mean,
she's a nut. Some say that she's basically Hillary Clinton with a Republican with an R on her name. Now, the campaign for Vivek Ramaswamy pledged to spend $12 million, $8 million through the Iowa caucuses, as $4 million in New Hampshire, but it's not really happening. The businessman, believe it or not, listen, is also trailing. Listen carefully to this. Vivek Ramaswamy, the businessman, is also trailing. He's only spent about $7.8 million compared to DeSantis. Let's see, $47 million. Trump's $39 million, and I guess Nikki Haley's $36 million. Now I appreciate that you got a little bit of money. Let's not laugh at $7-8 million. At the same time, you don't have to have as much money as the next guy, Doctor, and you don't have to have as many ground troops as the next guy. But you've got to have enough of both to be real. And I hate to say this, but when people are spending 30, 40, 50 million, and you're not even spending 10 million, you're not even close to being in the realm. It's kind of like if somebody spends, you know, $1 million to be a senator and Sam Bushman spends $5. You're not in the realm. You've got to have enough money and enough ground troops. Now, you can win with less of both if you're very strategic and careful and wise and... I'm not saying that you got to have the kind of or spend the kind of money some of these others do. It's insane. But at the same time, I don't even think you're in the ballpark when you're literally spending, $7 million on your whole national campaign. He started out in third place. He was almost to challenge Ron DeSantis for second place. Now he's slipped to fourth place, and in some polls now fifth place. Nikki's surpassed him. Ron's surpassed him. They've almost got double the numbers. He's in single digits. They're barely tapping double digits. None of them are close, and they're literally spinning. Think about it. Haley, Ron, and Vivek, all of them together, well over $50 million. And they're not even in the realm of reality, Doctor.
And we're very early in the whole election cycle. And basically, sadly, it's a travesty. I mean, all of the sadness that I could put into this, if you could get it on the radio, this has become, when all things are considered, a multi-billion dollar beauty contest that people are attempting to buy votes all across the nation. And sadly, the great bulk of the money comes from very agendized coffers, if you will. And you know, I think about, there's a couple of things that come to mind. If you had a principles-based that resonated with the people, if you could touch their heartstrings with a strategic approach, here's kind of what happened in 2006. Then let's talk about the Electoral College for a second. But back in 2006, a committee approached me and asked me to run for the United States Senate against Orrin Hatch. Orrin Hatch, at that particular time, it was like February of 2006, had a $6 million war chest for his campaign. And here I'm, you know, Mr. I don't know what you'd call it. I'm not even on the radar. And this committee that came to me, I says, you know what? He's got $6 million. I don't have any. I says, I can beat him for $500,000, for $500,000, because we could run a principles-based campaign that resonated with the people with appropriate touch points. Okay, they're without trying to air a campaign strategy. But I would have taken a fraction of what, and this was my honest assessment. I said, I can win for $500,000. I can scare him for $250,000. Anything less than that will not even be noise. And that's exactly where we ended up. There was not, there was about 10% of the $250,000 that I was saying that got donated. So yeah, it's a money game, yes, but it was never intended to be that way. The United States presidency was not to be for sale for some kind of beauty contest that's funded by bazillions of dollars, billions of dollars, literally. The idea was that the founding fathers separated, divided, and subdivided power and sources of power. So you know about the checks and balances that you ostensibly see that are in government. But the sources of how people came to those power was to be divided. The House, you can read about this in the 39th Federalist paper and in Tucker's view of the Constitution. But at any rate, the House was to gain their power from the people. And that was a separation of power sources. The Senate was to have its power source, the states. The presidency was to be a real composite and a kind of a hybrid, if you will. And it was not to be by the voice of the people, nor was it to be by the voice of the states. There were to be electors that were chosen, good, wise, honest, honorable, experienced statesmen, if you will, that each state selected. Utah, particularly right now, would get, because it was based upon the total number of senators and congressmen you have, two senators from everybody, and the number of congressmen based upon population. They would be chosen to be electors. And the electors would then elect the president. None of this Bravo Sierra that's going on now with popular vote stuff and everything. There's a real effort to get rid of the Electoral College. We had far better presidents as we used the Electoral College as it was designed. So these electors, six from Utah, 53, I think, 54 maybe from California, 29 from New York, 29 from Illinois, and so on, okay? Total number of people in the House and the Senate. They were to select the president based upon all of the issues. The president was to be a president of the entire nation. It wasn't to be an agendized regional thing or a party.
And the Electoral College was really a check and balance discussion about making sure that we didn't have democracy style mob rule.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, is we've moved dramatically towards that, because the 17th Amendment screwed up that dynamic with the states being taken out of the equation. The states had equal representation at the national level. Each state got two senators. That was clearly planned. Go read the 39th Federalist Paper and Tucker's view of the Constitution. But at any rate, so that screwed that up royally. And I can demonstrate numerically what has happened since we changed that dynamic. The House always bought their votes with the, they went out and rabble-roused with the populace and said, what do you want? I'll give it to you if you put me in. What do you want? I'll give it to you. They passed bills that were pork barrel. And then it went over to the Senate. And the Senate, the states, they had more diplomacy and statesmanship and everything else like that involved in the states.
You're right.
They ripped the money out. They said, wait, no, you're buying boats back home. We're not going to put that in. Senate would take it out. They'd send it back over to the House saying, if you put it back in, we'll rip it out again. We're not going to get anything. Since the mob. Yeah,
we're not letting certain states get the advantage at the expense of others. We're not doing that. We represent the states. The states need to stand alone and have autonomy. And I represent the state's interest in that. So it's a disaster, all the checks and balances. But listen, Vivek Ramaswamy, guess how much he's raised total during his campaign? Do you have any idea?
I don't, and it's probably largely self-funded. I don't know.
$26.6 million, most of it's his own money. Well, while spending a total of $22.4 million. Okay? That's according to FEC, Federal Election Commission filings. Now, listen to me. He's raised, with the help of all kinds of PACs and all kinds of groups and all kind of everybody, literally $26 million. Most of these candidates have double that just hanging around, all right? And it's just getting worse. You know, you do that, and you've only got 5% of the vote, 7% of the vote. Now, what Vivek is saying is, listen, there's a lot of independents, a lot of Democrats that'll swing over, a lot of unannounced voters. You might see some upset, some changes. And my response is you might, but you think you're going to get above Ross Perot's 19% at best as a third-party candidate? You're talking about at the primary, you get chopped off of the knees with this thing, and you're running fourth place after spending literally $22 million. And you're not even close. I don't care what kind of upset you see. It's not going to happen, doctor. There's not enough legs on the ground. Vivek is running. He's one of the hardest working candidates, you could say. But when I call him, he doesn't want to appear on the show. He says he's too busy. Well, Donald Trump Jr. appeared on this broadcast on Super Tuesday, and Donald won. So all I can tell you is this. Vivek is running hard. I'm not so sure that he's running very smart at this point. $22 million later, he's got 5% of the vote. I don't know how hard it would be to end up with 5% of the vote. But I don't think that's very hard, doctor. I really don't.
Well, yeah, there's always that noise out there that there's these discontents that are going to vote away from somebody somewhere. I think Ron Paul back in the day was running a populist kind of thing. I think if he'd been treated fairly within the Republican Party, he'd have made a lot bigger splash. I think Bobby Kennedy,
no question.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is running a populist campaign.
And he would make a huge splash if given the chance. He's making a massive splash, even more so than any other third-party candidate we've seen in modern times, including Ross Perot. He's even making a bigger splash than that right now, even with no media coverage at all.
Well, see, here's an interesting phenomenon. This is local if you talk about where the state Sam and I live in the state of Utah. The state of Utah pulled a stunt. And it is a stunt, and we could go back at how corrupt Utah's politics is. Everybody thinks they're squeaky clean. They're probably, I put them at the second most corrupt state in the nation, and I always get a big cross-eyed look at that. But I think we can justify the fact that we are absolutely convinced the state of Utah's politics is among the most corrupt in the nation. That's another side trip. But what happened?
Yeah, whether it's
Utah,
second, first, third, who knows? It is absolutely full of corruption, all the way down to the city level. I found that out when I was forcing the ombudsman for the records to prove their attorney was lying. And I literally caught him in a lie, and he got busted in front of. Okay, so look, this is all the way down to the local city level. This stuff happens.
It
Continue,
does.
Doctor, so but that's proof to your point.
What happened was that historically and by law, Utah has had, and by the way, the lieutenant governor of Utah is oversees. I mean, what they do is they skew the elections. But at any rate, So the lieutenant governor, who is a partner with the governor because they were elected as a, say, a president, vice president kind of relationship.
Yeah, like a team.
Right. They're a team. They're both Republicans and they're both, wow. Anyway, so the first week in March is historically when all of these filings for offices and stuff, and this is when every candidate's got to get ballot access in whatever state so that if they're on the ballot and they could get an electoral vote. Okay, so what they do is they have to gain signatures if you've never been on the big box parties. So Bobby Kennedy's been in the state trying to collect signatures to get on the ballot in Utah. And arbitrarily, unilaterally, without any boo-hi or howdy, the lieutenant governor says, oh, they've got to have their signatures in by the first week in January. Well, so what does that do to your signature gathering? I mean, it throws it clear out of whack. Now, by the way, whether you
Happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, January's here.
Right. And so boo-hi or howdy didn't happen, and they changed it to the first week in January. And that really, really, really puts a third-party candidate at a real disadvantage. And whether you like Bobby Kennedy or not, I believe he should be on the ballot. I believe that voices should be heard. And he brings something to the table that needs to be considered by the people. I mean, his military-industrial complex bona fides, I mean, holy cow. His stuff about medical
freedom, he's far from perfect, but he's done a lot of good, and he brings some real issues. That's one of the things about Ron Paul that matters, is he brought some real issues to the table. We never really discussed abolishing, auditing, ending the Federal Reserve until Ron Paul made that a national campaign issue on the debate stage, to make your point.
Absolutely. So here Bobby comes along and says, the heck you say? So he sues the state of Utah, files a suit against the state of Utah for this arbitrariness. Well,
I don't think he should have,
I believe. And he had enough wherewithal as an attorney, and his footprint, his family name, his charisma, all that kind of stuff played into it. And I understand, and I just got this news, I think it was Friday, that the state of Utah has backed off on that first week of January thing, and it's now the first week in March, as it has been historically. Well, so that's the thing. These states are manipulative to prevent.
Well, that's election fraud. And what if he didn't have the stature and the money and the family name and all the charisma and all, everything that you pointed to? Could he have got them to back off and go back to the standard as opposed to their election fraud attempt? The answer is probably not. And I'm glad that he did. Don't misunderstand me. But I'm making a point of how they even commit fraud in ways that most people don't even realize are fraud. But it is. What if it was me? I wouldn't have got that pushback.
You're right. There's a corollary showing the smaller potato people, as the state of Utah, in my opinion, stupidly and again agenda driven and everything, has decided to change the state flag. The legislature says we're going to do that. They have bunches of bucks behind this thing to put this crayon drawn state flag out. I mean, it really is a kind of a clown show in and of itself. But at any rate, the people that wanted to keep the traditional Utah state flag that has kind of an historical, every symbol on it has an historical background with it. You can say, oh, yeah, that ties to this, that ties to this.
And it's godly, by the way.
And the clown-drawn proposed state flag, there's people trying to get signatures on ballot, I mean on petitions, to get it back on the ballot for the November 2024 election. And so they have had the rug pulled out from underneath them. They have been told the first week in January they've got to have these in. I understand there's like 150,000 signatures necessary to get them on the ballot. I think they're about 90,000 now. The state, I don't know everything that's gone into how they've discounted or thrown
You're not careful. They'll just disqualify a lot of the signatures and whatever.
They did. They discounted, I think, over 20,000 of them. And so they're still, here it is, the middle of December, and they've got really, truly about 3 weeks to get these in, and so they've put every roadblock in their way to make certain that this now clown show new Utah flag, the flag we love,
and that's not really what it took to get the new flag in rolling position, right?
Well, the new flag actually, that's by the way, I was driving home from a speech at a university on Saturday night, and I was driving home on the freeway, and I saw these big billboard signs, you know, these electronic billboard signs that are along the freeway about the flag we love, with this new clown show flag on it. And you know, the people that are trying to obtain signatures, it's really a grassroots operation. So anyway, I think there are about at 90,000 signatures, because 20,000 or some have been discounted or
I support
rejected.
The current flag.
And they got to get to 50,000, and they've only got a brief period of time to do it. And they're probably going to have to file a suit against the state of Utah to get them to extend it to the traditional time that they could turn those in. I don't know if they'll be successful. They may use the same.
But even so, what drove this whole thing? Why are we debating the flag in the first place? Why are we switching to a different clown show flag anyway? All the problems we face in the country and as a state and everywhere else, and we're literally going to work on the flag?
It's a
distraction.
Why don't
we fix the time zones? Okay.
Or, you're right.
And I digress,
buddy.
But I'm making a point that it's like, what the heck are we talking about? Well, Vivek Ramaswamy, not only is he losing big, not only has he raised $26 million only, and he's spent $22 of it already, not only is he not able to spend much money anywhere else, he's losing ground faster than he's getting it, no matter how hard he runs. He won't appear on radio shows that offer him free time because he's, quote, too busy, but maybe later is what they say. And then here's the deal. Now Vivek Ramaswamy got caught in an embarrassing hot mic moment during an X space event with Elon Musk. Did you hear this?
No, I missed this.
Presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy takes a leak, takes a pee, takes a piss, whatever word you want to use for this. He left his mic on when he went to the bathroom. There was 100K-plus listeners listening. Elon Musk and others kind of speak out about it. Alex Jones was speaking, and he's like, hey, someone's in the bathroom with a hot mic. Alex Jones is there. Elon Musk is there. Elon Musk goes, I hope you feel better. Vivek, colon, says, I feel great. Thank you. And so then we have the soundbite to play for this. It is awkward. Here it is.
Decide not to have children. That's all I'm saying. Elon Musk is promoting an optimistic pro-human future that the science and evidence shows is real and that we need.
Gentlemen, I have to
go. I just want to be I want to be very clear about my position. I'm super pro-human, and I mean all humans. You know, humans in America, humans in
somebody's
Africa,
got their thing open,
and everywhere
somebody's
else.
Got their phone open in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's Vivek. Vivek, that's your phone, Vivek. I'm not able to mute you. Vivek. Perfect. Go ahead, Elon.
Sorry about that.
So, well, I hope you feel better.
I feel great. Thank you. Sorry about that, guys.
All right, there it is. Vivek literally goes to the bathroom. It's live on X or Twitter. They're having like a town hall. And I don't know why Elon Musk and Alex Jones and Vivek is with them. So Alex Jones literally got busted, owes $1 billion, whatever. Now he's in the supposed bankruptcy. He's still a rock star. He's hanging out with Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, all these other heavy hitters on Twitter. Vivek literally takes a leak in the middle of the broadcast, and they openly admit to it. And he's like, guys, I got to go. And then they're like, oh, sorry. Hope you feel better. Yeah, I feel great. Okay, this is the clown show. 100,000 plus listeners. When we get back, we'll talk about it next hour with Dr. Bradley. We'll also talk about a new media venture happening, speaking of all that. I'm just saying, I don't know what is happening in America, but they're making a mockery of the whole country. And that's the way I bring it up. I don't mean to bring up the crudeness of Vivek and his actions, but I've got to lay this out so people understand. A presidential candidate that really wants to win the presidency is literally taking a leak on an open mic, and then they laugh about it on X and Twitter. And Elon Musk and the host, the main guy or the producer says, hey, they call him out by name instead of leaving you to wonder who it is. They call him out by name. Then they further say they don't have the ability to mute you. We got to talk about this. Dr. Bradley with me, freedomsrisingsun.com. God save the Republic.